Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is titled, Do Authoritarians Rule the World? Part 1. Recorded in 2023, Dennis McQuestion, former clinical professor of corporate governance and executive director of the Institute for Excellence in Corporate Governance at the University of Texas at Dallas, speaks with Barbara Kolm, PhD, director of the Austrian Economic Center and president of the Friedrich August von Hayek Institute, and Robert Salinas Leon, PhD, Director, Center for Latin America at Atlas Network, and President of the Mexico Business Forum, about the nature, rise, and consequences of authoritarianism and autocracy around the world, examined through a free market, classical, liberal lens. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
Hello, I'm Dennis McQuestion, and welcome to Perspectives Matter. And the topic today is, Do Authoritarians Rule the World? You're going to hear some very interesting perspectives from our guests, but let me just warn you that this program is about politics, and in particular, political power. Who has it? How did they get it? What are they doing with it? And I would imagine most of you know probably the most famous quote in the world about power, and it's by the 19th century historian Lord Acton, and here's what he said. He said, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. He said, when great men are almost always bad men, think about that for a minute. He said, even when they exercise influence and not authority, still more, however, when they you superadd the authority on top of the influence, you get corruption. And then he went on to say that the ultimate heresy is to believe that the office sanctifies the individual. Now, to those individuals sitting in the studio in Dallas, one is you're going to hear is from Mexico. The other one is from Austria. I'm at our studio in France, so this is an international program, and don't you forget it. So first, joining us from Mexico City, Roberto Salinas. He's president of the Mexican Business Forum, the Alamos Alliance, and he's the director for the Center for Latin America for the Atlas Network. He's also an expert on trade, all sorts of international relations, and obviously economic liberalism. Roberto, welcome to the program.
Dennis, thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you. And sitting next to you is someone you know well, and that's Barbara Kolm. I know her well, too. I've interviewed her before. She's vice president of the Austrian Central Bank. She's director of the Austrian Economic Center, president of the Hayek Institute and professor of Austrian economics. And I'm going to see if I get this right, Barbara, at the University of Donja Gorica in Montenegro. Is that close enough?
Perfectly well.
Okay, great. Well, both of you, welcome to Dallas, obviously. And you're doing something, Barbara, that you do every year, at least for the last 10 or 15, called a free market roadshow. Primarily, you do it here in Europe because I follow you around. You're there in Dallas to do it, but tell that viewer just very briefly what the Free Market Roadshow is and why you're doing a few of these in the United States this year.
Well, first of all, thank you, Dennis, for having me. And it's a pleasure and privilege to be together here with Roberto in the studio and discuss the topic. But the roadshow has been, invented or created 16 years ago by us at the Austrian Economic Center in Vienna. And the idea was simply, on the one hand, to export Austrian economics, you know, the idea of Menger, Mises, Hayek, Schumpeter, etc., the good old Austrian School of Economics. And the second thing was, back then, we had a conservative, pro-market Freedom Party government that was doing the right reforms in terms of structural reforms, making sure that the budgets don't overboard, making sure that debts are being limited again, doing the right reforms on the pension front, on the healthcare front, etc., privatize. So we thought, well, if we have those good reforms in place, we could also import them. And combining those two was the kickstart of the roadshow in 2007. And then all of a sudden, the GFC, the Grand Financial Crisis, hit, and we immediately switched gear and topics and started to provide libertarian, which is pro-market, solutions to today's problems. And this is what the roadshow has become over the years. We have been touring in Europe, 45 plus countries. It's an endeavor of 8 weeks that we go to a different city every day. And of course, in the US this year, we have already done 4 cities in Michigan. We will be in Dallas here tonight. And it's, you know, making sure that the US is not turning as socialist as Europe is already. So make sure that we defend our core values, individual freedom, entrepreneurial freedom, and private property.
Okay, Barbara, thank you. Well said. Now, Roberto, you come from Mexico, and there are a few people that don't know exactly what the Atlas Network does. So give us just a brief history of the Atlas Network, and then tell us what we mean by authoritarianism and autocracy.
Okay, that's quite a handful, Dennis, but let me try. Atlas Network is an institution that will be 42 years old this year, founded by Anthony Fisher, in order to provide financial, organizational, and logistical support to emerging think tanks and civil society organizations around the world. Today, after 42 years, there's over 550 organizations that are affiliated in the partner network of Atlas. And what Atlas does is something called Coach, Compete, Celebrate. In other words, they offer training in order to set up think tank organizations, civil society organizations, media training as well, organizational, fundraising, and whatnot. They also invite you to compete for grants. There's a significant amount of new grant fundraising that has been done by Atlas Network and that is provided for the benefit of these institutions. And there's a celebrate component that is very important, where five times a year, in 4 different regions, we have regional forums. Let's say we just completed our Latin America Liberty Forum in Punta del Este in Uruguay, which is an important region nowadays in terms of the market stance that Barbara was explaining recently. And then there's also the Africa Regional Forum, the Asia Regional Forum, and the European Regional Forum. This year, it will be in Prague. In May. And it concludes with a very important global forum in New York in November, where a very substantial prize is awarded to the best think tank policy proposal or policy win, so to speak. So there's a great deal. It's a very vibrant organization. It's not a think tank per se, but it's sort of like a meta tank. We're still trying to figure it out, actually, Dennis, but it's an organization that through its leadership has grown in influence, especially in these hard times. And these hard times, now shifting to authoritarianism, have to do a great deal with how has authoritarianism emerged. I direct the Center for Latin America in Atlas Network, and whether it's Mexico or Colombia or Honduras, or Chile or Argentina or, of course, Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua, you see authoritarians of all stripes that have emerged through democratic means, but some that come in through democratic means, they then proceed to eliminate all institutions governing liberal democracy and stay in power.
Yeah, Roberto, let me stop you there. That's a great overview. And I was going to say, based upon what you and Barbara are doing, I'm surprised that there is any autocracy or authoritarianism at all. You've got it all under control, or I wish you did. But back up there for a second, because I know that you know what's happening in Latin America, Central America, and just focus on a couple of those countries right quick before I get Barbara to talk about a couple of the countries in Europe. But let's hit on the ones that are probably most, let's just say, literate with most people, and that's Venezuela, and then, of course, Cuba, and maybe even the connection between the Venezuela and Cuban forms of government.
Well, I would have picked two others, but okay. Venezuela is governed today by Nicolás Maduro, who is the heir to Hugo Chávez. And Hugo Chávez came in through democratic means, but basically eliminated all democratic institutions. In Cuba, following the Cuban example, in Cuba, they just held elections. You can only vote for one party. So in a sense, yeah, it's a democracy, but it's a completely nominal or false democracy. And it has been ruled by over 60 years by Díaz-Canel. Well, first Fidel Castro, now Miguel Díaz-Canel. any dissent whatsoever, whether it's from the point of view of artists or media or intellectuals, is stamped out. And it's not stamped out by not allowing you to speak. Basically, you go to prison and you get tortured because you're dissenting with the government. And the same path has been followed in Venezuela and now is beginning to be followed by other countries in Latin America. So it's standard. That's what an autocrat is. It's not left or right or center, up or down. It's somebody who's absolutely in, I wouldn't say in love with power, in lust with power. And it's all about power, maintaining power. And the real one percenters, like George Orwell said, all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than others. And this is what we're seeing today in Cuba, in Nicaragua, in Venezuela, in Colombia, in Mexico, and in many other regions throughout Latin America.
Now, well, we hear a lot of that, obviously, in America for sure. Now, Barbara, in Europe, I thought the EU was putting everything together and that, you know, Russia was going to be a part of the European area and NATO was going to be sort of not important. Are there any authoritarians in Europe at the moment?
Well, you know, if we have to look at a different definition probably in Europe for autocrats. And, you know, if you look at the Latin term auctoritas, which means power and influence, and this is actually what they try to grab. And there is a huge difference. I brought The Road to Serfdom here with me. You know, Hayek's famous book, when he was warning against totalitarianism in 1944, which came in Europe from the Nazis and in the Soviet Union, the communists. So there is a difference of the autocrats here in Europe that you see, as Roberto mentioned, it's the absolute grab for power. But they don't have an ideology. It can be left or right. It's a wide spectrum. And then what differentiates them from the totalitarians of the 1940s and the communists was that there is no mobilization, no mass mobilization, at least in Europe. You don't see that on that front. So these are two different things. And of course, they are a little bit more pluralistic than the others. So we have to make sure that those things are there. So now there are countries in Europe that are supposedly, or that are even by Brussels, claimed that this is authoritarian regimes or countries. Hungary, for example, has this problem. Poland, to a certain extent as well. This is what Brussels claims. To be honest, you know, because in some places they just don't fit the ideas and don't match what the ideas of Brussels were or of certain politicians in Brussels are. And it's a question of tolerance that we actually as Europeans, when we defend our four European freedoms, should have in mind. And so, you know, Europe has been diverse and will always be diverse, not only because of our cultural backgrounds, the different languages and all that. There is no one size fits all thing. Brussels wants or prefers this one size fits all. We have seen it doesn't work, whether it's on the monetary front and after the grand financial crisis that we've seen, but it's also on the cultural front that we see. So Hungarians literally solve their problems and issues in a different way than, say, the French would do. And you know that perfectly well when you are in France, that those ideas don't go together. In Italy, we have a different system as well. So, but all of those, and as Roberto already mentioned, they came into power and they were elected by the populus, by the people. So this was democratic votes. This were democratic elections. And then if you kind of twist certain things, especially with regards to the rule of law and the judges, as Poland, for example, did, then certain people claim, hey, this is not the democracy. This is not the way we want it to be done.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, let me stop there and ask both of you, but first Roberto. We mentioned democracy. I think, Roberto, when we talked a few days ago, you mentioned liberal democracy. So I want you to sort of differentiate liberal democracy from sort of elected autocracy. And then you mentioned that a lot of these countries, the leader was elected, you know, and then the institutions sort of went away. So a couple of things. How did they actually get into power? Mention a couple of the other countries that you would have mentioned. So give us some more examples.
Well, these are obviously hard questions, but the way we see liberal democracy is a democratic regime that also has checks and balances, where there's a certain credibility in the rule of law and the rules of the game in independent institutions, whether it's the central bank that is independent or whether it's the Supreme Court that is independent. A culture of freedom of expression is extremely important for a liberal democracy to work its ways in a manner that can be fallible. And if we elect somebody that we don't like that turns out to be inept or simply does not work, well, that's why you have the democratic institutions there. Then in 4 years or 6 years, you can say, out. This is happening in Mexico right now, where we've had probably what I consider is the worst president that Mexico's ever had in its history. And we can't wait for the next 14 months. Some people even claim that the peso is appreciating against the dollar because there's only 14 months left for López Obrador to be in reign. But he's one who's trying to dismantle all the institutions that underpin what we would call a liberal democracy. It's not a magic wand, Dennis. It's not an instantaneous solution to all our problems, but it's the least worst alternative, if you will, the best alternative that we have in order to avoid the emergence of the strong Pancho Villa-style caudillo authoritarians that then go on and without any ideology whatsoever, the only focus is to retain power. And unfortunately, this is what is occurring in many countries throughout Latin America. The other example is...
Roberto, let me stop you right there, because the idea of Mexico is sort of important, especially for those viewers in Texas. And there are lots of definitions of different systems. And the one I sort of like that relates to Mexico, and you'll see why, is the definition of a kleptocracy or a mafia state, which is ruled by thieves, a system of governance where its officials and the ruling class in general pursue personal wealth and political power at the expense of the wider population. In strict terms, kleptocracy is not a form of government, but a characteristic of a government engaged in such behavior. And then it goes on to say examples include Mexico, sorry about that, as being considered a narco-kleptocracy, since this democratic government is perceived to be corrupted by those who profit from trade in illegal drugs smuggled into the United States. So what do you think about that?
Well, that's another hard question, because if we're going to call all of Mexico a kleptocracy, I think that's just openly false. Mexico does have a vibrant trading relationship with the United States. In fact, it's the number one trading partner. Last month, I think Canada surpassed us, but we seem to be going back and forth between number one and number two. There's a certain part that is governed by narco regions, and I'd love to hear Barbara's take on this matter too. But let us not forget, Dennis, that we're also talking about an entire productive chain. Yeah. And the profit, Austrians will tell us, is made at the margin, at the retail level, in the last point of sale. So there has to be, it's not just, if kleptocracy is a problem in Mexico, and it is, I tend to associate it more with the corruption involved in government than the lack of rule of law. It's also something that's born out of the vast amount of consumption that takes place of these illegal narco substances. And this is a debate that has been, we've been having this since Milton Friedman visited Mexico in the first event that I hosted in 30 years ago. And it's a very important debate to tackle, but it's one that cannot be tackled in isolation. It's one that does not just involve Mexico. Mexico, get your act together. Well, we also have to get our act together in the United States, in Canada, and I would argue in Europe and in China and elsewhere. It's a very, very serious problem. Barbara, what do you think about it?
I think what one really has to be very careful with the generalization of this. So, if you look back in history, why did the Roman Empire fail and fall apart? Because of those issues, because they didn't get their democratic act together again. And because there were people who just were corrupt and who just were power greedy. And that is an issue that is probably, I mean, it's humanitarian, it's humane. Mm-hmm. And we have certain types of people who will come to power and then they will abuse power. And we Totally. And especially in Europe, we have seen that if you can kind of limit this with the checks and balances in place and make sure that your democracy is strong and strong enough, it's a liberal democracy where the individual's rights, where the entrepreneurial rights are safeguarded by the constitution. And so this is where we have to look at how can constitutions be written that they will not be torn down by those autocrats or totalitarianists that we see these days. And I think this is a task that we as libertarians, as pro-market defenders, as people who believe in the rule of law, will constantly have to defend and make sure that this is in place. And that's, I think, the role of that we, for example, have in our societies, to make sure that people understand the value of those important backgrounds. And if they don't get it, then we need to educate them. And this is what Atlas does, that what all our think tanks do across the world.
Free Market Roadshow does.
And
yeah.
this is, I think, our...
The two of you, I think, obviously, you're doing what you can do, and I appreciate that. But it seems to me, and I, again, looking back at what other people are saying, 50 years ago, we were probably in worse shape with autocracy than we are now. Seems like things got better, especially after the fall of the Berlin Wall and the Soviet Union, that sort of thing. But first, I'll go back to you first, Barbara. Give that viewer a sense of, are we moving worldwide in a positive direction now, or are we getting less free today?
Well, after COVID, we are definitely being less free. I mean, what we have seen there with governments taking care of the individuals and locking them in, not only locking individuals in, but by doing so, destroying the supply chains and making sure that the price distortions are there. And now we see inflation. I mean, there are many other reasons for inflation as well, but this is also one of them, being locked in. So in other words, we are less free probably than we were 10 years ago, but there is always those moves, the boom and bust cycles that we see from economics. There are also those boom and bust cycles of individual and entrepreneurial freedom that we can follow throughout history, and that's, I think, something that we have to keep in mind. And it's upon us to make sure that people understand that individual freedom is the most important good that we have, and that constantly needs to be defended, and also that we need to step up against our politicians who want to take it away from us. So, putting this short, in Europe we are freer than in general, also thanks to the fall of the Berlin Wall. Then we're much freer than we were 30 years ago. That's one thing. But there are single issues. For example, I named Turkey. Turkey, when I was a student 30 years ago, Istanbul was a free, very tolerant city. Now, these days, it's not, unfortunately. And Erdogan has done everything to undermine the positive impact of freedom and of liberty as we in, say, the Western world understand it. And so this country is less free than it used to be 30 years ago. But probably it will come back again, and I'm sure of it, because there will be other elections and people will understand that certain politicians fail in a way when they cannot provide the minimum service that a government should do.
Barbara, I understand that, and you put your finger on something very important, and that is the level of services. And Roberto, one of the things that it seems that brings people to power and they're wanting to stay there is because people get dissatisfied. And so you look at, the guy wrote a book called The Revenge of Power. He talks about populism and polarization, and we've got that in America. We'll talk about that on the second part of this program. But populism and power, it invites, doesn't it, the kind of autocrats that we see right now in your part of the world?
Yes, that's actually Moises Naim who wrote The Revenge of Power, and he talks about populism, polarization, and post-truth, which is the manipulation of facts to suit your preconceived idea of how you want society to be structured. So when one of these autocrats comes in, like my president in Mexico, Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, and they think they're Saint Benedict. So they have the monopoly of truth on how you should lead the virtuous life. That's whenever somebody tells you, I know how to lead, I know how you should lead the virtuous life, and they're in politics, run. Do unto others and then run. That would be the rule, in my opinion, because that's extremely dangerous to think that somebody has a moral authority over you to tell you exactly how you should behave, how many shoes you should own, exactly what prices, how they should be fixed, what the minimum wage should be like, and they become know-it-alls. And when you know everything, of course, you can't dispute that. And if you dispute that, you're not only saying something false in their eyes, you're actually being a traitor to the nation. Friedrich Hayek, as Barbara is reminding us right now, said a rosy plan for farmer goes well in rural areas, a plan for industrial workers is popular in cities, and so on. Many new planners are elected to office. So the whole idea of central planning and of the vanity of thinking that everybody can assemble all the knowledge that is required in order to be able to govern everybody's lives, I think is at the core, Dennis, of the big problem with authoritarianism and autocracy and kleptocracy too. From autocracy to corruption is a very small step, because if you have the wherewithal to control everybody's lives, from there it's very easy to begin to pony 10% here, 7% there, 12% there. And then all of a sudden you find out that these people are by far, like Cristina Kirchner in Argentina. Her net worth is over $500 million. And people know it. And yet still she doesn't go to jail.
It shows we're all in the wrong business. We only have a minute or so left.
It's bad business.
Barbara. So let me ask you to mention one thing, and then you could talk about what you're going to talk about in the next segment. Friedrich Hayek wrote an incredible paper about knowledge, and I think in 1945. Give me in 30 seconds what he said and why that person watching this program needs to read that paper.
Well, this is exactly what I was going to refer to. Thank you because when I wanted to interrupt Roberto, it is, you know, about the pretense of knowledge in society. And actually, Hayek gave the great speech when he was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1974, and he talked about the pretense of knowledge. So, in basic, we do not know everything, despite the fact that we have things like that or other tools where we could look things up. But this is the one of the three P's that you mentioned before, the post-truth. You know, there is no such thing as full information, and we do not know everything, and it's arrogant of certain individuals to know everything.
Barbara,
they don't.
I know one thing, and that is that we're out of time. But thank the two of you. We're going to have part two, so be sure and watch the next segment here. And thank you for joining us, because you can see the perspectives that we have, and they all matter, because as always, we talk about things that matter with people who care.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.